We're opening our time together with just a vulnerable story of his own life and really a story of what we call the imposter, the faker, the way that many of us and in times of stress can present ourselves and we might feel like we're being authentic and true to who we are, but really, are we really being true to who we are? No, there's other stuff going on under the surface that I think that when that emotion comes and surfaces, it helps us be aware of, okay, what's really going on for me? What do I need to tend to under the surface? Lately, you know, I just thank God for those times of stress and difficulty because it shows me what's really going on under the surface. Sometimes it's hard to face that stuff. But I believe that God gives us those things as a gift of grace because he wants us to embrace fully who we are and to know his grace in those places. This term imposter might be new for some of you. And I sent an email to our mainstream email and gave this example of someone who God created to be an introvert. But really, because of the people that they idolize and put up on a pedestal, many of whom are extroverts, that introvert says, I don't really want to be an introvert. I'd rather be an extrovert. And so they push down and pretend to be somebody else other than the person that God created them to be. So they're in groups and they present as extroverts, but they come home and they're drained and they're just... They don't know why that doesn't seem to energize, but they continue to present as someone that really God didn't create them to be. And they do it so long, so many years, that they have now forgotten who they really are. They're not even in touch with who God created them to be. There's another example, and I think Peter alluded to it, and probably many of us relate to it, is that we may have all kinds of anger and disappointment under the surface. But it's really scary to look at those things and begin to tend to them. So rather than doing it, we sweep it under the carpet. So when we're with our friends and when we're in the community, we present ourselves as nice, and actually syrupy, so sweet. But that's not really what's going on. And so what everybody gets is something false. And the crazy thing is that we believe that if we pretend the anger isn't there, that it might go away. But we all know that that really is not the case. And I think for many of us, we really don't know what any other option there is. We don't want to present our anger and be angry people. Hey, that's just who I am, and I'm just going to... No, we don't want that either, because we know how damaging that is. So we feel our only option is now to pretend, to be syrupy. And I would venture to say that both are the false self. God is actually trying to get at something even deeper. For some of you, you know, this idea of imposter might be new, like I said, but maybe a place to begin is what are some of the symptoms of the imposter, the false self? So let me give you a few questions and we'll see where you're at. Don't worry, I won't ask for a show of hands. First question, am I the kind of person that says yes when I really mean no? Do I get depressed when people are upset with me? Do I have the need to be approved by others to feel good about myself? Do I act like someone on the outside, but on the inside I can't stand him or her? Do I often remain silent in order to keep the peace? Do I believe that if I make mistakes myself, I'm a failure? Do I criticize others in order to feel better about myself? Do I try to avoid looking weak or foolish for not having the answer? Do I have to be doing something exceptional to feel alive? And do I have to be needed in order to feel alive? Am I fearful and unable to take risks? Do I do what others want so they don't get upset with me? Do I use knowledge and confidence to cover my feelings of inadequacies? Do I want my children to behave so well so that people think I'm a good parent? That's a good one, hey? If you're a parent, we all relate to that one. Do I compare myself to other people? And the last one, do I dismiss checklists, questionnaires, or anything that makes me feel uncomfortable? I don't know about you, but when I read that, it's just like, oh, yeah, I relate to too many of those. And these are just symptoms that reveal that probably we live more out of a place of false self than we live out of a place of true self. That redeemed person, child of God that God has created us to be. 1 Samuel 17 gives us two pictures. David, when he's in touch with him, with God, and there are times in 1 Samuel that we know David is not in touch with himself, not in touch with who God is. And I would venture to say that when David makes those kind of dark choices out of his dark, false self, I mean, we all know those stories. But there are times that David is true to himself and he's true to who God is and he lives out of this true self and he knows God deeply. He's true to who God made him to be and true to God. On the other hand, we see this dark side, and I would venture to say that Goliath is that metaphor for us today. Goliath is this beautiful picture of the imposter, the false self, the pretender, the one who presents all big and large, but really under the surface, he's not that strong at all. So two mirrors for us today, David and Goliath. I want to read 1 Samuel 17, 1 through 11, and we'll dive into the text. The Philistines now mustered their army for battle and camped between Succoth in Judah. And Saul gathered, countered by gathering his Israelite troops near the valley of Elah. So the Philistines and the Israelites faced each other on opposite hills with the valley between them. Then Goliath, a Philistine champion from Gath, came out from the Philistine ranks to face the forces of Israel. He was over 9 feet tall. He wore a bronze helmet, bronze coat of mail weighing 125 pounds. He also wore bronze leg armor. He carried a bronze javelin on his shoulder. The shaft of his spear was as heavy and thick as a weaver's beam, tipped with an iron spearhead that weighed 15 pounds. Some say 25 pounds. His armor-bearer walked ahead of him carrying a shield, and Goliath stood and shouted a taunt across the Israelites. "Why are you coming out to fight?" he called. "I'm a Philistine champion, but you are only the servants of Saul. Choose one man to come down here and fight me. If he kills me, then we will be your slaves, and if I kill him, you'll be our slaves. I defy the armies of Israel. Send me a man who will fight me." When Saul and the Israelites heard this, they were terrified and deeply shaken. On the surface, Goliath looks ominous, unconquerable, and he looks real. It looks like this is reality. This is the way it really is. And that there's really no alternative for the Israelites but to live in submission. I mean, look how Scripture defines and paints the picture of Goliath. It's ominous. It's not just his size, it's his reputation, it's his taunts, it's his words. It's like a schoolyard bully. He intimidates with words. "I am the Philistine giant, the champion, but you are only the servants of Saul." And it's such a beautiful picture to me of the imposter, whispering to us that he is bigger than life, this is the way it will always be, and that this is as free as you're ever going to be as a child of God. You're small, you're weak, you can't defeat me, you can't rise up and be all that God has created to be. You can't. That is really the Goliath in all of us. "I'll rule you forever. Things will never change. You can't beat this negative thought pattern. You can't beat this addiction. You can't stand up against fear. You can't take hold of the future that God has for you. Just this mocking imposter's voice. You know, David had his giants, and we're going to look at some of the giants that he faced. And I don't know about you, but I too have these giants standing in my way. We have these giants speaking lies to us, holding us back from really embracing all that God has created us to be. So let's look at the three giants that David has to defeat in order to embrace God's bright future. First giant or obstacle that David faces is his family of origin. His family of origin in verse 23. David's this young boy, goes out to the battlefield to feed his brothers bread and cheese. And as he comes out, the Philistine giant begins his taunts. And David witnesses and sees that the army of Israel is running away. And David asks the soldiers standing nearby, "What will a man get for killing this Philistine and ending his defiance of Israel? Who is this pagan Philistine anyway, that he is allowed to defy the armies of the living God?" And these men gave David the same reply. They said, "Yes, that is the reward for killing him." But here's verse 28. But when David's oldest brother, Eliab, heard David talking to the men, he was angry. "What are you doing around here anyways?" he demanded. "What about those few sheep that you're supposed to be taking care of? I know about your pride and deceit. You just want to see the battle." David is this young boy, probably between 12 and 15 years old. And God has put him on center stage, has taken him out of his environment of the wilderness with his sheep, and he's placed him before a king. God is obviously at work in this young man. He begins to emerge and begin to take hold of all that God has for him. And what happens? A family member speaks lies to him. His family of origin. We all face this giant, don't we? David is one of eight brothers. He's the youngest, the smallest, and the weakest. And the older brother in this context has the authority. What he says goes. So this person in his family, the one with authority, tells David that he doesn't belong. That all he's good for is herding sheep. That all he's good for is menial tasks, not fighting battles. He even attacks his character and says that he's full of deceit and pride. It's pretty heavy. You think about this boy, 12 to 15, beginning to address the dysfunction and the lies and the deceit that's going on in the armies of Israel, and immediately he comes up against a barrier. Someone who should know him and love him now speaks lies into his very soul. "You don't belong here. You're not a warrior. You're good for nothing." I wonder how many of us relate to that same kind of experience. Maybe you're a young girl, a young boy growing up in your home environment, and you heard a word, a lie, a label that cut deep. You began to emerge as the kind of person that God wants you to be. You're catching a glimpse of what that looks like, and somebody puts you in your place. It's hard to step out of family roles. Each of us come from families where we had a role. The role may have been an okay role. I heard of a story of a young girl who lost her brother, and she wasn't allowed to grieve because somebody said because she was always known as the happy one in the family, she felt that she wasn't allowed to grieve, wasn't allowed to be honest with her pain because she was the happy one. That was her role. Some are grown up with a role of "I'm the black sheep of the family," so everyone uses that person as a scapegoat. rather than look at their own dark issues, it's pretty easy to point the finger at the black sheep of the family. And so when the black sheep tries to step out of that role, what often happens? Family members put them back into that place. Unbeknownst to them, put them back into that place where they are comfortable because they don't have to look at their own stuff. There's all kinds of roles. Roles as fixer. Maybe the role as the glue in the family that keeps the family together. So as a result, you're always fixing everybody's problems. But as a result, no one ever gets close to you, and you are not even allowed to look at your own stuff because your job is to fix everybody else. Here, David's been given a pretty harsh label by his brother. All you are is a shepherd boy. You don't belong here. You're not a warrior. Get back to where you belong. And I think it would have been pretty easy for David to just succumb, listen to his brother's words, and say, you know what, you're right. I don't belong here. I'm out of here. I'm going to go do what I'm used to. I'm going to go do what I'm good at. But he doesn't do that, does he? I love the text because all he says is, what have I done now? I was only asking a question. And so then he walks over to some others and asks them the same thing and receives the same answer. Then David's question was reported to King Saul. There's something going on in this young man that he's able to say to his brother, that is not true, and I do not receive that. And he continues to press in to all that God has for him. The first giant that David has to defeat is this giant, this obstacle of family of origin, stuff that many of us, I think, relate to. You know, I have to say, I identify as an adult with many of these things, and I was given labels, I was given remarks by parents, by loved ones. But now that I'm as a parent, I realize just how hard it is to be a parent and how easy it is to say things that you don't mean. How easy it is to send messages that you never intend. And, you know, I think early on in my parenting, I didn't think I was wounding my kids, but I think after a number of years, you begin to get wiser and you realize, you know what, I do wound my kids, not intentionally. And it helps me realize that my parents did the best that they could with what they were given. But I think, for many of us, in our brokenness, we end up loving our kids not for who they were and for what was beginning to emerge in their lives, but who we wanted them to be. What we wanted them to be. And as a result, our kids can grow up, and we can grow up in those environments saying, we believed this lie that if we're lovable, we're lovable if we're good enough. We're lovable if we go to college, if we become a professional, if, and the list goes on. David is disregarded by his brother. He's the least. He's forgotten. He's dismissed and ignored. But isn't it beautiful that David isn't disregarded by God? That God sees him? Maybe you need to hear that today. That God notices you, sees you, and loves you. The second giant that David has to stand up against is well-intentioned but misguided people of authority. Well-intentioned but misguided people of authority. So he goes and stands before Saul. He says this, "Don't worry about this Philistine," David told Saul. "I'll go fight him." And then he hears this, "Don't be ridiculous," Saul replied. There's no way you can fight this Philistine and possibly win. You're only a boy, and he's a man of war since his youth." Wow. Another obstacle. I wonder how many of us received those kind of words from people that were put in positions of authority over you. A pastor, a teacher, someone who said something to you that still has left its mark, that a lie saying you cannot do that, you will not emerge and be that kind of person. I think we all relate. Like I said, it would have been pretty easy for David, this 12 to 15 year old boy, to listen to Saul. I mean, he's led thousands of men. He had numerous victories under his belt. He knows what he's doing. He's famous. He's experienced. It would have been easy for him to say, you know what? You're right. I'm just a boy. I don't belong here. But David doesn't give up. He persists. He tells Saul of the times that he rescued lambs from the mouth of the lion or the bear, and that in the same way that he caught and killed these creatures, he would do the same. And he makes this declaration, "The Lord who rescued me from the claws of the lion and the bear will rescue me from this Philistine." Saul believed in God. The troops all believed in God. But the crazy thing is that they were all acting like atheists. Like they didn't believe in God at all. When I think about that, I wonder, and I actually see that in my life, times that I face difficulty, it's so easy to succumb, believe God intellectually, but actually live my life as if God doesn't exist. Pretty easy to do. Saul is persuaded, finally dresses David in his tunic, his coat of armor, his bronze helmet, and his sword. Imagine this little boy, 12 to 15, dressed up in all that garb. And again, it's such a picture of the imposter. Think of what we think is right and good, what someone is supposed to look like when they go into battle, but it doesn't fit who David is. I wonder how many kids are living imposter lives, thinking that they're true to who God wants them to be, not because that is how God made them, but because somebody else has told them, this is what it looks like to be a person of God. Oh, I have that same spiritual gift. This is what that looks like in real time. And we lay those things on our kids and friends. And it's really not at all what God has intended for them. Here everyone is giving David advice on how to fight and how to defeat the giant. And I think there's many times in our lives that coaches, teachers, pastors, significant others, experts in our field who tell us what we should be, what it should look like, because after all, they have all the experience. So easy that since we have so much experience, since we have the experience to saddle all of that on our younger and our kids and the people around us. And I wonder, it just weighs them down. Yes, the Bible tells us that we are considered wise when we listen to wise counsel. Proverbs 15:20 says that wisdom is the foundation of in an abundance of counselors. It's wise for us to surround ourselves with people that speak life into us. It helps us not become blinded to our own blind spots and shadow side, but we have to be careful. David threw out very wise, what seemed to be wise counsel. Because why? He knew himself well. He knew who God made him to be, and he knew who God was. There's something that happened in the life of David as he was a shepherd boy in the wilderness. He came to know himself well, not just God well. He came to understand that this is who God is making me to be. And so when Saul spoke something into him, he was able to say and differentiate, you know what, that's not me. I have a good sense of self here. And you know what, you're trying to lay something on me that's not healthy. Isn't that beautiful? Oh, if we could have that same kind of confidence when people in positions of authority and family members speak things to us and we're able to say, I don't receive that. That is not true. I have a good sense of who I am in Christ, and that is not it, and able to just be able to deflect that. It's such a beautiful picture of health. David threw out wise counsel only because he knew himself well and knew God well. Now, I think we have to be careful with this because we all know folks that think they are at a place with God and their understanding of themselves where they really aren't, and as a result, make tragic decisions in the name of God. But I want to say, that's not what's going on here. David knows himself well and knows God well, and therefore can discern the difference between the two. So the first obstacle, family of origin. The second, well-meaning but misguided leaders. And the third obstacle, David's very own Goliath. This Goliath, this giant inside and out. Verse 40. David goes and picks up 5 smooth stones from the stream and put them into the shepherd's bag. Then, armed only with his shepherd's staff and sling, he started across the valley to fight the Philistine. Goliath walked out toward David with his shield bearer ahead of him, sneering in contempt at this ruddy-faced boy. "Am I a dog?" he roared at David, "that you come to me with sticks?" Some translations say stick, but most say sticks. And he cursed David by the names of his gods. "Come over here and I'll give your flesh to the birds and wild animals," Goliath yelled. But David replied to the Philistine, "You come to me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of the heaven's armies, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. Today the Lord will conquer you, and I will kill you and cut off your head. And then I will give your body to the birds and wild animals." Pretty crazy what he does to this giant, but it's such a picture for us in what in Christ he gives us the strength to do to our giants. So they no longer rule our lives. David has this his very own Goliath. And I think in reality, we all have Goliaths in our lives, outside circumstances as well as people, internal voices, like I've said. It's true, Goliath looks big, strong, unconquerable. But my question around giants, are they really as big as they appear? I believe that what made Goliath as big as what he seemed was everyone believed the press about him. They heard he was a champion. They knew his size was impressive. They heard all the talk and they bought into the lie. And I think we do this all the time. People speak things into us. They really don't have power unless we give them power. It's the same thing with giants. The Israelite army and Saul all believed the press. Rather than see how big their God was, rather than see how big they were in God's eyes, they chose to focus on how big their enemy was. And that is what gave him power. You know, in actuality, I don't believe that Goliath was all that big, all that powerful. I just think he presented well. In fact, I think Goliath was a pretender, a wannabe, a faker. I believe that the Philistines knew that as well. I believe, in fact, that the Philistines took their giant and presented him, knowing full well that the Israelite army would cower in fear. And they were banking on the fact that they would never get close enough to see that he was actually a fake. That he looked strong, but really he was weak and debilitated. Now, this might be Darcyology, okay? But there are more and more theologians out there, as well as doctors, neurologists, that are proposing this new idea. Let me throw it out at you. The Goliath actually suffered from a disease that was caused by the pituitary gland to produce excessive amounts of growth hormones. You and I produce 200 to 300. People with this disease produce 3,000. little girl in Thailand who's 12, and all of a sudden she grows to almost 7 feet, the largest person in Thailand. There's a girl in China, she's 7'8". It's a disease, it's called giantism. Which would explain why David was so easily able to sneak up on the giant in order to kill him. Why? Because people with this disease are actually awkward. They can't move all that well. And if you ever wondered in this text why Goliath needed someone to attend him and come with him into the battle? You ever wonder why he needed a boy to come and hold his hand and guide him into battle? I've always wondered this. Could it be that he was actually blind? One of the symptoms of this disease is tunnel vision and blindness. I mean, it would make sense. Because David comes with his slingshot and his staff, and what does Goliath say? You come at me with, like, a dog with sticks. Sticks? It's only one stick. Goliath isn't able to actually go after David. What does he say? Come to me. Why? Could it have been because he was actually blind and unable to move with coordination into the battlefield? I wonder. But again, this is Darcyology. It's a theory. But if the theory is true, it actually doesn't take away at all this boy's faith and trust in God. It doesn't take away from that at all. And the lesson that this would speak down to us is that what appears to be impossible and insurmountable can easily be defeated. And I think that is the message. What you think is insurmountable, the darkness under the surface of your life, that part of you that you don't want to look at, it appears to be larger than life, but really, is it? To me, Goliath is this wizard behind the curtain. Sounds all great and powerful, presents well, is this tyrannical leader who uses smoke and mirrors, deceit and trickery to really hide his own shortcomings. And I think this is what I believe Goliath epitomizes for all of us. And that's really the temptation behind the imposter, isn't it? We're all tempted to hide our shortcomings from everyone. Even God presents strong, even when we feel weak and powerless. And this is the choice. Keep hiding behind the facade, pose bigger than we are, keep relying on the 10% above the surface to hide what's really lurking underneath the surface. And this is where David is such a beautiful example of what living in the true self is like. David knows his weaknesses. He doesn't try to overcompensate. He doesn't go into battle wearing his armor and the sword and the spear. He actually embraces who God made him to be, and he says, you know what? I'm a 14-year-old boy. I am not this, I am this. And you know what? I'm not good with a sword, but you know what I'm good at? I'm good with a slingshot. That's who God made me to be. And I'm going to go into battle being who God created me to be and trust Him to use me. Isn't that beautiful? It's a message for all of us to not listen to the lies of family of origin and people that are positions of authority that try to put us in our place, but actually allow God to download into us who we are in His eyes, who He created us to be. When I was in seminary, as a friend of mine I got to know, he was a geologist. Up north, working for a big corporation, he felt God's call in his life. So he ended up in seminary. Brilliant guy. Young man in his 20s. Wanted God's plan for his life. Wanted to embrace God's bright future for him. So he goes to seminary, and within weeks, he realizes, you know what? I'm a duck out of water. This is not me. And he's confused. He's like, I felt God's call to come into, to dive into full-time ministry. I take the only pathway I know is available to me, and now I'm here. And he was completely disillusioned. Why did God call me here? This isn't me. So he's sharing this with me, but little did he know, the day before I had a conversation with my friend from Samaritan's Purse, and at that time I was doing some recruiting for them, and he was telling me, Darcy, we need someone who is ideally Asian and who has a good grasp of Asian culture. If he knows Mandarin or Cantonese, if he knows Thai or anything, even better. But we need someone to run our water treatment program in all of Southeast Asia. Someone who has a heart for God and for ministry, but they need to be a geologist. They need to know soil. They need to know how to work in that industry, in that area. And then I'm sitting down a few days later and I'm hearing this man's plight. And I was able to say to him, "Ah, God led you here because he has a place for you. He has a unique future for you. But I wonder sometimes, what would have happened to that young man if he would have said, nope, I'm called into full-time ministry. It needs to look this way. It needs to be traditional." What would have happened if he would have felt, because of what others said to him, stayed in that environment? Oh man, he would have been miserable, wouldn't know the joy of the Lord, wouldn't be doing what God's called him to be because he listened to what other people said of him. There's a great quote from Seeds of Contemplation. It says, "Trees and mountains and rocks, unlike humans, are their true selves. A mountain is a mountain. It doesn't make a choice. A tree is a tree. It doesn't have the free will. But we have a choice. God leaves us free to be whatever we want. We can be ourselves as we please. We are at liberty to be real or unreal. We may be true or false. The choice is ours." David makes this choice to be real, to be who God created him to be. To say no to the lies that he received from family of origin, to say no to some of the well-meaning but misguided people of authority trying to guide him, and saying no to the giants inside of himself, and saying, "No, this is who God created me to be. I'm going to be that person." I believe that God is speaking to us and has a bright future for each of us. Knows who we truly are. This morning as we were praying with the team, someone prayed just this beautiful prayer, acknowledging that even if we think we're in touch with ourselves, so often we're not. We're still only getting a glimpse of what that person really is. God knows who we are. He knows our true selves. He knows who he created us to be. And I believe by the power of God's Spirit, he's just calling us to embrace who that person really is. And giving us the courage to begin to look underneath the surface and begin to plumb those depths. I know we're running a little late, but I want to do this exercise. In order for you to begin to understand God's voice and God's purpose for you, I think you need to hear his voice yourself. So we're going to do some listening prayer right now. It's a little exercise.